Hello and welcome to a very special holiday edition of Radio SGN. I am one of your hosts, Lindsay Anderson, and joining me today is...
Cameron Martinez. Benny is in Disneyland right now.
Yeah, RIP Benny is off being a Disney adult, so you're just going to have us silly, goofy people. Just a reminder, my pronouns are she, her.
And mine are they, them.
And Benny is she, they, but she, they ain't here today. It's just us. Merry Christmas to us. Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of fun holiday things. We've got a really great interview with some special performers that are going to be doing a Christmas show in Seattle this week, so definitely check them out. But let's get to the news, because we had our holiday special 2 weeks ago. The last issue, not the current issue, but the issue before that was our holiday special, and we want to talk about it because it's Christmas time and we're going to talk about what we want to talk about, right? You know, I did just realize that in like a couple weeks, it will be a full decade since 2014.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Right? Oh, that made me feel so weird. Like, I was a freshman in high school a decade ago, and that makes me feel like so fucking old.
I was not, so I don't feel that old.
It'll happen. It'll happen before you know it, Cameron. I was you. I was you 2 years ago. I was the young person on this podcast, and now I'm the old one.
I was in eighth grade in 2014.
Well, you were so cool. I'm ancient because I was in ninth grade. And oh, man, it's just so crazy to think about, though, the styles, the skinny jeans. And oh, have you seen there's like kids that are in middle school and high school today that are like romanticizing 2014. They're like, I wish I was a teenager in 2014. I'm like, oh my God, what? No.
I don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
I don't know either. Maybe the Tumblr vibes or like the fact that Lorde was new on the scene.
Oh my God. I had this like mutual friend who was like, oh yeah, like I'm friends with Lorde's boyfriend, and she would always talk about it on Kick.
Oh my God, Kick. I forgot about that.
It was a weird time.
No offense to your friend, but I think they were a liar.
I think they were too, but like, I remember I confronted her and then she blocked me.
That's what a liar would do.
Also, she wasn't my friend.
Oh, okay. Before we get to the news, can we talk about this? I just found out that my coworker slash the youngest person that works at the SGN, Cameron over here, goes to a bikini barista like twice a week.
First of all, I'm the second youngest. Rowan is the youngest.
Shout out to Rowan. We love Rowan.
Yeah, I go to a bikini barista twice a week. It just started like a month ago, and now I'm hooked.
It sounds like you're talking about an addiction, yeah.
It could be.
Is the coffee good? Like, be honest.
I only get Red Bull Italian sodas, and here's the thing. The cheapest Red Bull Italian soda you can get is like $7, and I always get the $10 one.
Do you tip well?
I do.
Oh God, I'm sure they get lots of good tips there.
Yeah, like the reason I feel comfortable going back and supporting it, because like before I felt kind of weird about it, is she like actively has her OnlyFans like listed on like a little card right at the window. I'm like, oh, okay. So like people are like scanning this and like she's getting money in other places. She's owning her sexuality.
Good for her.
Exactly.
We support all kinds of work here.
I was raised in a Catholic setting, so... I just have so many questions for her about, like, being in the sex industry. And, like, oh my God, like, what do your parents think and this, that, and the other thing? It fascinates me.
I think it is fascinating. That's something I'd love to get into later on in this podcast. So stay tuned, because two good Catholic children are going to do some Christmas trivia to see what we know about other holidays that are celebrated at this time of year. So I guess not Christmas trivia, holiday trivia. But also something that's going on right now is there are amazing queer businesses in our community that you can shop at. If you are looking to get some last minute gifts for the people in your life, check out this awesome article by the youngest person at the SGN, Rowan. They did this super cool spread for our holiday special and highlighted some of these amazing businesses. So Cameron, do you have any that you want to shout out from Rowan's article?
Yeah. So I noticed Rowan shouted out Third Planet in Bellingham. I've been going there since I was about 18 years old. They used to have a smoke shop in the back, which is where I bought one of my first bongs. Unfortunately, they do not have that smoke shop anymore, but it is still very nice in there. Lots of tarot cards, lots of witchy bitchy things. Very nice, very snazzy.
Yeah, I do like that anecdote. I guess also shout out, I'll shout out Spokane's Atomic Threads that carries the SGN. First, it's just huge that anywhere in Spokane is carrying the SGN because Spokane is Spokane. But also, yeah, it's a cute little thrift store. I've been there a couple of times. I think I went for the first time when I was like in college. I did not buy a bong there, so I'm not as cool as Cameron, but still check it out, people. It's great. Let's see, what other holiday stuff can we get into before we move on? Here's another fun one. Your favorite podcast hosts collaborated for our first collaboration article, 2023 Gift Giving Guide. So, you know, if you're not able to stop by some of those local shops that we just shouted out from Rowan's article, go on over and check out me and Cameron's article. We have consumables under $15, subscriptions under $100, and gifts for the naughty person in your life. So yeah, there's a lot of varieties there, and I did tarnish my Google search history to research this article, so please give it a look.
I think it takes more than that.
It takes more than that to tarnish it?
Yeah.
Okay, well then maybe it's not tarnished.
Also, Lindsay did the sex part, I did the normal part.
Thanks for throwing me under the bus there. I was trying to be subtle with it, but yeah. If you're looking to buy sex toys, these are my recommendations. Also, the rose toy is no longer on sale.
Boom.
Not that I was looking. Okay, well, with that, we've got a really great interview coming up. Just stick around for these super cool commercial breaks, and we'll be right back.
Intamin Theater presents Black Nativity. Langston Hughes' gospel song play returns in an all-new production. Celebrate the season at this holiday spectacular featuring a citywide gospel choir and a rousing audience sing-along, perfect for families of all backgrounds and beliefs. Showing December 12th through the 30th, tickets at intamin.org. That's intiman.org.
So welcome back, listeners. Those were some great commercials we just heard. And now joining me is Aaron Malkin and Alistair Knowles, better known as James and Jamesy from the very popular traveling comedy duo show, Oh Christmas Tea, which, by the way, will be happening this week in Seattle at the Neptune. Was that correct?
At the Neptune Theater.
There are limited tickets still available, so get on them, get those tickets, and come see these funny gents. How are you guys doing?
If I wake up with my legs like red, burning because the muscle demands of the show.
No, really?
I do a lot of exercise through the year, and this show works me.
Just for reference, we've done approximately 30 shows in the last 24 days, and it's a very physical show. It's that time of the year when our bodies get into this kind of go, go, go mode. We get into better shape in very particular ways, and we have to really take care of ourselves in order to survive this long, joyous, exciting tour that we're taking all over the Pacific Northwest this year.
I love that. So you said it's very active. What's like the most strenuous part of the show for both of you?
Oh, there's some parts of the show that we only do during shows. Whenever we rehearse them, we just fake it and we don't actually commit to it because
until there's hundreds of people watching.
Until there's hundreds of people watching, and we've been leading up to that moment. So there's like our bodies are limber, our flexibilities are our exercise. And then when the time comes and the energy is there, then we do those flips or those leaps off each other's shoulders. And
I'll just say there's a point in the show, a couple points specifically that we don't do in rehearsal anymore. One of them is this huge ship comes through an island on center stage. And now it's an imagined ship, but I'm going to scale the side. Like I'm going to scale the side of the ship while Jamesy is climbing my back up to my shoulders. So we're going to make it look like I'm climbing a ship and he's climbing my back while I'm climbing that ship. And he jumps off my shoulders onto the ship. It is as tiring as it sounds. and we only do that during the show. And the flips, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some dancing in the show and the more energy intensive moments or less safe moments. We only do when we're really, really warmed up.
Is that nerve-wracking for you to like save these special parts for just the show?
Yes, as my body ages. So I think I've been having knee problems over the last couple of years intermittently. And so when I do these things, I go, well, I know I can, like my body as a whole can do them, but are my joints just going to give out partway through the show? And I don't know. We've been doing these shows for a decade. In another decade, if we're still doing them, which I think is our plan, I don't know what kind of changes our bodies will, or our show will have to make.
what accommodations we'll have to make to the show in order to accommodate our aging bodies. I guess the take home note is see the show now while we're still reasonably young.
Yeah, but I also kind of look forward to when, 10 years down the road, because I see some older performers that, have had their time, like Steve Martin and Martin Short, for example, mm-hmm. Canadian physical and verbal comedians. As people age, there's like less this feeling that they need to impress people. At least that's mm-hmm. my perception. Like, I love seeing older folks on stage because their life experience,
their performing experience also.
Both. But I think their life experience is evident on stage. And there's less this sort of youthful desire to impress or to prove themselves. And that watching someone try to impress is just agonizing to watch. So to see people as they age just be relaxed on stage and enjoying themselves puts me at ease, at least. I don't know, maybe I'll get there.
Yeah.
Put a lot of energy out on stage.
I love that. So actually, I have a couple questions for you, less about the future and more about the past. When did the two of you start working together?
2012?
Yeah, about 2012, 2011, doing community theater shows. Both of us had no plans of making theater our primary livelihood. I was in school doing a business degree.
I was working in visual effects for film.
It was Thomas doing the background digital design for Thomas the Tank Engine.
No way. That's so cool.
And we were both working on a theater show in our kind of extracurricular time or off work time.
Yeah.
And loved it. It was the first show I had been a part of. And after its run, which was 5 weeks, Alistair wanted to still get together with people and work on performance stuff. So he had this idea called Superhero Boy Band. Just the concept.
Oh, yeah. The superheroes in a boy band, that sounds really fun. Like, I was not a musician, not a dancer, but I just thought those two things sound like a great time.
So he invited a few of the people who were working on that first show together. Three of us ended up creating that show, Superhero Boy Band, for a couple of years and had a wonderful time doing it. And Alistair and I realized we want to create the same kind of show. And we happened upon these James and Jamesy characters, which when we put them in a cabaret show, like just a 10-minute skit, the audience response was unlike any we've ever experienced before. It was just the room was electric. The room was just like loving the dynamic of these two characters.
Yeah. Something I want to say something about those two characters in that show, which was a dynamic that we still play with today, is these two characters exist in the same world, but they have totally different perspectives of their own reality. So James talks directly to the audience. James, on the other hand, cannot see the audience, believes that what's on stage is real and there's nothing beyond the stage. And so how did those two worlds meet? And they meet in theater. They meet where the audience gets invited into this world of make-believe, invited to suspend their disbelief and join us in this story, in this creation. And we highlight that distinction and play with it.
That is so clever. Like, how do you come up with, like, even just playing around with the awareness of the audience between two different characters in the same show?
When people say, did you write the show? The image I have is like someone sitting down at a typewriter, a computer, or a pen and writing. And our creation process has never been like that. We take an idea, for example, I'm going to rattle this teapot. And the lid is gonna rattle and it's gonna be like a phone ringing and then I'm gonna answer it. Let's play with that idea. And so he picks it up like a phone and I imagine that I'm on the other end of the line and we have a conversation and we improvise that concept in front of an audience and video record it and see how the audience responds, see how fun it is for us. And things that really have a wonderful energy to them are really fun. We're like, okay, well, let's incorporate that idea. And that's how our earlier shows kind of were fleshed out through trying things out with audiences, ideas that excited us.
Our earlier shows and even our current shows, like even in this tour, every year we try to add more play into our show. So we're always cutting bits and adding bits in. And there was a new scene that we're creating where we have an audience member on stage. They have a mop that jingles. And then we do a whole sequence about this jingle bell mop. And we had some ideas as to how it could go. But because we had never done it with an audience, the first 15 shows of the tour that scene, which was a new scene, we're like, oh, this element works. We got, oh gosh, that element totally dies. We got to cut that, switch it up. Oh, we need these props. We're like going out to different shops, buying
fake snowballs. 1,000 snowballs in the audience.
They were like, oh, okay, that doesn't work. Or the snowballs came, they were too small. They're
still
like,
1,000 snowballs. What are we going to do?
I like thinking of our show as like a living thing. And that's a real privilege to, I don't know, privilege. It's the position we're in as the creators of the show.
I'd say it's unique for a theater show to have the creators of the show be the performers. So we have this creative license to ongoingly make changes on the fly, decide what we think we should do, and actually do it.
Nice. That's really cool. And kind of my next question is about your comedic stylings. I've seen that A Christmas Tea has been compared to Monty Python, Mr. Bean. Who kind of inspires you, either theatrically or comedically, with your act?
The subtitle of the show is A British Comedy. I think because that is a big part of the inspiration for our inclinations with these characters. The juxtaposition of British propriety with the absurd is embodied in these James and Jamesy characters. James is a rather relatable, everyday kind of person, and Jamesy is eccentric, the guy who inhabits more his imagination than the real world. And the interface of this propriety with absurd is something that is very common in, like, Monty Python did that in almost every skit. It's just this interface of like everyday kind of relatable, like, I'm being proper. I'm, you know, I've got manners. I'm smart. I'm clean. Interfacing with something that dramatically contrasts that, you know. And so Monty Python is, I think, something that we both grew up with.
Yeah.
And Mr. Bean also very kind of an eccentric character that interfaces with people who are just going about their days, who are like, what, you know, reacting to this peculiarity, this guy who's why is he doing all these things in absurd ways.
Another inspiration of someone who does primarily live theater is Bill Irwin, who's won a bunch of Tony Awards for his performance and choreography and clowning. And he has a show called In Regard of Flight, which I only ever saw a video of. But what it did, which was so exciting for me, is it was a comedy show highlighting elements of theater, aspects of theater, what makes theater real. In fact, there's three performers as part of the show. Bill Irwin, the performer, another character who is the pianist and sort of narrator, and then there's a critic from the audience. And so the show is about this interplay between the critic and the performer and the narrator. And by sort of having this conversation, it kind of spirals into this wonderful philosophical discussion of what is happening on stage. What is new theater? What is the relevance of theater? And our shows try to hit that in the same way, not just Oh Christmas Tea, but our other works as well, trying to bridge that gap between audience and performer. And I'll say, we were doing our show off Broadway in New York, and we go into the audience as part of the show, and partway through the show, I'm crawling with my fingers over top of audience members. And whose shoulders do I walk up? I look up and it's Bill Irwin sitting there watching.
No way. That's like amazing. Oh my God.
A real highlight. You know, do you see your idol as you're like walking with your fingers up their shoulder? I'm not sure if he liked the show, but we liked having him there.
That was one of our weirder shows called In the Dark, which is performed exclusively in the dark, just lit with spotlights that we wear. Back to your comment about In Regard of Flight and this kind of meta world of that theater can have is our most recent show called Easy as Pie, recently created. Whenever we create a new show or perform one of our shows, we have the experience we gained in performing it or creating it to bring back to our other shows. And now something that we like to do in Oh Christmas Tea, a British comedy, is once in a while we'll step out of the show and like talk about the show, how that happened, try a thing again, switch roles. We've given ourselves new permission, which I think really is welcome. Like the audience responds really well to it. And before our most recent show, we wouldn't have done that. We wouldn't have stepped so completely out of the show. But now it seems like, oh, it's just part of the show. And it's very exciting when it happens.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's very like improv, super fun. You guys said you met in theater doing a show. Have you done or studied a lot of improv with your acting careers?
Primarily clown. So physical theater. Clowning we think of as a very impulse-driven style of performance that relates in real time with the audience, acknowledging what is happening in the room and delighting in that. So that was David McMurray Smith.
I just want to mention many of your listeners might have a very clear sense of what clown is. And in the world of theater, when we say clown, it doesn't necessarily refer to like the circus clown with face paint and a red nose and big shoes. That is an appearance of a style of clown. But when we use the word, it refers to kind of no fourth wall. Like we don't mm-hmm. pretend that the audience isn't there. Things that happen, happen, and we acknowledge them. And through that, it allows us to really foster connection with the audience and share with them our delight in what's happening yeah. in the theatrical world that we're creating.
And so I mentioned briefly, David McMurray Smith, he is a clown instructor based in British Columbia, who Aaron and I have studied with extensively and who has worked with us as our co-creator and director for all of our shows. And his guidance in holding us true to a sense of integrity with like and a clarity with what we are trying to do with our shows has been really helpful. You know, our show sort of Superhero Boy Band, which was a show mainly about how can we do the craziest stuff on stage together? Like we had angle grinders, audience members with angle grinders grinding off steel chastity belts, like spark flying all over the stage. It was like CO2 fire extinguishers being blasted off around the stage. Like it was just crazy for the sake of craziness, pretty much. And it was wildly fun. And then now David's like, okay, that's great. It's super fun. But what are we trying to say? What are we doing here? And with Oh Christmas Tea, what we're trying to do is we're trying to ignite the imagination and sense of play in amongst a room full of adults. So our show is family friendly, but it's mostly adults that attend the show. And most adults don't get a chance to regularly play together, not just laugh at a joke, but be a part of the creation experience of a room full of delight, where in our show, what starts off as like a gentle invitation to the audience, just a simple hello, and the audience responds, hello, soon evolves so that the entire audience is like making animal noises, swaying back and dancing with each other, pretending they're drowning, screaming out loud. We give them the tools and the opportunities to play with us. And many adults delight in that. There are some that don't. I go, hey, whoa, I came to watch a show and be entertained. I do not want to be part of anything. And that's a challenge for us. You know, that's
try to get through to as many people as we can and keep the invitation alive and the delight present enough that, you know, if they can taste of it, if they can connect with something in themselves that is inspired in the moment, often people report that they, you know, the show has given them a new sense of who, like people say, I never would have done that. And they did. And this elation of their spirit, there's just like, they feel a little more alive and a little more connected to the people in their lives through the experience of the show.
Yeah. And the people they came with too. You know, like we had a mother and daughter come to the show and the mother was invited up on stage and she came, and then partway through her experience on stage, her daughter was in the audience looking so eager, and the mom, I think I need my assistant. And so we brought the daughter up on stage too, and the two of them are playing together on stage, just loving it. And we got such a nice email from the mom afterwards saying what a great experience it was for the two of them to have that moment together.
That is so cute and so special. I love that. So Oh Christmas Tea obviously is a holiday show. What made you guys want to do a Christmas special?
It didn't start off as a Christmas special. When we had a booking to do the show in December, it just created that question in our minds, like, could this be a Christmas show? And so we dabbled in trying to make it a Christmas show, and it felt good. It felt right. And so we decided to make it more a Christmas show.
And it was like, okay, what is our show about? Our show is about imagination. It's about coming, these two friends that come together and celebrate their differences. And then what is Christmas? What is Christmas to us? And for us, or at least for myself, Christmas is a time where we get together with loved ones. We get to share space outside of our regular lives. And we get to celebrate a sort of tradition. We get to celebrate sort of this playful sense of imagination. It's a time where adults can sort of play with the concept of Santa, or, oh, did you hear that? Are there hoofs on the roof? Oh, elf on the shelf. I wonder where Elfie's going to be today. This sort of sense of magic where anything can happen, and adults get to play with that. Like, I have kids myself, and I love that. Like, run downstairs. Oh shit, we forgot to hide Elfie. Hop Elfie across the room and fall. Like, oh wow, Elfie found its way behind the plant in the corner today. And me and my wife are just like, just enjoying that moment. There's a sense of play amongst adults at Christmas time.
That is so special. I love the connection between play and childlike wonder in Christmas goes together really well. So those are all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else you guys would like to add before we wrap up?
I don't know if we said it explicitly, but the show is playing this. I don't know when you're listening to this. you're listening to this right now, but this Thursday, December 14th at 7:30 p.m., the show is at the Neptune Theater in Seattle. You can get tickets at ochristmastea.com. That's ochristmastea.
O is the letter.
The
spelling of the drink tea.
Thank you for specifying that. And we will also include that in our show notes as well.
Great. All right. And we hope to see you there.
Absolutely. Thank you again to Aaron and Alistair for being on our show, for bringing some joy to Seattle and play. And we'll be right back after a couple more commercials.
Pride Place is now leasing. Pride Place is Seattle's first affordable senior housing designed to be affirming to LGBTQIA+ seniors. Located in the heart of Capitol Hill, just two blocks from the light rail station, Pride Place offers brand new studios renting for a little over $1,100 a month and one-bedroom apartment homes for under $1,500. These below-market rents are available for income-qualified applicants ages 55 and up. Learn more at prideplaceseattle.org. That's prideplaceseattle.org. Pride Place is an equal housing opportunity that screens applicants in accordance with City of Seattle regulations.
And welcome back. That was a great interview with James and Jamesy. They're super funny gents. They do go by gents. Like, their manager always refers to them as the gents when she's talking about them to me, and I thought that was really cute. Okay, well, you're back with Cameron and Lindsay, and now it's time for the dessert of this podcast. We have fun Christmassy things to do. So, Cameron, really quick, what would you like to start with? Should we do a holiday Mad Lib? You want to do the trivia or Reddit?
You know, let's start off with some trivia because I'm feeling really smart right now.
Okay, cool. Good. So I will quiz you because I will be seeing the answers. Okay. So listeners at home, we're about to get into some holiday trivia. Play along, see if you can beat Cameron. And if you do beat Cameron, let us know on social media.
For context, I went to Catholic school from 2nd to 12th grade. I had to learn about religions, other religions, like once in 9th grade.
We'll start with Chinese New Year.
Oh, hot damn.
Chinese New Year, also called Lunar New Year and celebrated in many countries outside of China, starts on the second new moon after the winter solstice. The exact date varies from year to year, but it always falls during the winter. In China, the holiday season lasts for weeks. Cameron, what Chinese zodiac are we currently in for this year?
I think we're going on Year of the Dragon, aren't we?
The one that we're in, like 2023. It's about to wrap up. Yeah.
So I know after the dragon, it's the snake. Before the dragon, that's 1999. Sorry, excuse my French. I've been saying fuck a lot.
Yeah, I know what year it is because it's my birth year.
Damn it.
It's my bad luck year. I'm having bad luck.
I'm going to say rabbit.
You are correct. It's the year of the rabbit.
Oh my God.
Yay. So it's going to be the year of the dragon next, you were saying?
Yeah, I'm year of the dragon.
Cool. So if you do not celebrate Valentine's Day in February, you could still celebrate the holiday Dragobete, which is a Romanian celebration of love on February 24th. But what is Dragobete named for, Cameron?
Dragons?
No, the Romanian god of love, whose mother, Baba Dushi, separated him from his wife after he married without her blessing.
Okay, how the hell would I have gotten that?
Every year, people in Romania celebrate the couple's triumphant reunion by gathering snowdrops, an early blooming wildflower, and holding bonfires and looking for love. These are like very obscure holidays. Let's see. This website, by the way, that I'm reading is for kids. Like,
and I'm still getting it wrong.
Okay. Japan has been celebrating Hina Matsuri for how many years?
3,000.
1,000.
Damn it.
Do you know what it celebrates?
Winter.
Girl.
Oh, why don't I know about it then?
It's the festival of girls. Yeah. Families gather and display special dolls. Yeah. Oh, and they have sticky rice cakes wrapped in pickled cherry blossoms and layered with rice cakes and more.
I need to spend more time in Japan.
Okay, here's a good one. I know about this one. Swedish tradition, St. Lucia's Day, is marked by a very special outfit. What is this outfit?
Lederhosen?
No, it is a white gown with a wreath on the head, and there are candlesticks coming out of the wreath.
How?
If you read American Girl Kirsten, she wears the special little outfit in it.
I have not.
Okay, what day of the year is Kwanzaa celebrated?
Sometime in late December.
December 26th, and it's actually a week-long celebration. Do you know what it celebrates?
I want to say it's an African-American holiday, correct?
Yeah, it is. It's African-American culture. It's known for seven principles of unity known as Umoja, collective work and responsibility, Ujima, cooperative economics, Ujamaa, self-determination, purpose, creativity, and faith. That is Kwanzaa. There's another holiday that's also celebrated on the 26th of December in a lot of European countries and Canada. Do you know what this holiday is called?
No.
Boxing Day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boxing Day. I know that.
Yes. It's like Black Friday, but...
I was thinking like more along the lines of like a French Canadian thing.
I think it is kind of a French Canadian thing. They do it in France and Canada. So listeners, you know, one thing very dear to us here at the SGN is Reddit. And Cameron has gathered us some amazing stories from the darkest part of the internet. And we'd like to share them with you.
I'm gonna let you go first.
Okay, let's see. Am I the asshole for telling my 7-year-old cousin that I'm gay? Am I the asshole for telling my 7-year-old cousin that I'm gay at the Christmas party? 19 male and super gay. I've been out publicly for 4 years now, but TBHH, it wasn't hard for anyone to tell before that. My family has all been chill about it, and I never had any issues dealing with homophobia. Almost no issues. My mom's brother and his wife give me the, "That's nice," while trying so hard to force a smile whenever it's brought up. It's not so much my uncle as it is my aunt. She's super Catholic and super Irish. That's about all the details I'll give here. We do Christmas with my mom's side the weekend before, and I was sitting next to their 7-year-old daughter. My other cousin was there with his girlfriend. He's my age. Little cousin says in her adorable 7-year-old voice to me, "Why don't you have a girlfriend like my brother?" And honestly, without really thinking anything of it, I said, "I won't ever have a girlfriend. I like boys. I'm gay." He had a hardcore stare from my aunt while my uncle tried to tell a story to distract her. It didn't start a big fight then and there, but today I heard all about how my aunt called my mom and really gave it to her. I had zero rights to tell their daughter what gay was. They're the parents, and they will decide when she can know about it, etc. After my mom told me all this, I questioned why they need to be secretive about it. I asked if they think it's shameful. Mom assured me no, but they claim as parents it's up to us to teach our children about that. My uncle has since called me basically begging for his sake to call my aunt and apologize, and to get this, try to walk back the comment next time I see her. He's giving me the, "You know how she is, just apologize so you can stop annoying me about it." So Reddit, am I the asshole for doing this? Also, fuck apologizing, that's not happening.
No, not the asshole at all.
No, that aunt is definitely like, will get books banned at her children's elementary school. I hate her.
You hate the little daughter?
No, I hate the aunt. Sorry. Little daughter, I feel bad for her, honestly. It's like, it's giving this episode of Dance Moms we watched where Abby was like, sorry, I have to bring it to Dance Moms. She wanted the moms to all teach the kids about gay people because their dance was about don't ask, don't tell. And this one mom was like, yeah, you need to be chill with gay people because like a lot of the boys you dance with are gay. And I was like, girls can be gay too. Like,
yeah, literally JoJo Siwa.
Yeah, half the Dance Moms kids are gay now. I think it's very funny.
It's so crazy. I just listened to a podcast where JoJo Siwa was actively talking about eating pussy, and it was like an out-of-body experience. I don't know what was happening.
Everything I know about JoJo Siwa, I learned against my will, and this is just one of...
You're welcome.
Will you scrub my brain for me by reading a different Reddit post, and it will probably be less horrible than...
What I just said?
JoJo Siwa, yes.
Should I do a Hanukkah one or another gay Christmas one?
Whatever you want.
I'm going to do... Am I the asshole for doing an Irish goodbye at family Christmas after my uncle made off-color comments? Edit, I've been informed in the comments Irish goodbye is an insulting stereotype, and I definitely recognize the hypocrisy of using a stereotype in a post about hating bigotry. Thanks to everyone who mentioned that for teaching me something. I unfortunately can't edit the title, but I should have said something like, leaving without telling anyone instead. We appreciate their edit.
Yeah.
All love to the Irish people. I'm a lesbian. I was at family Christmas and my family was talking about my auntie's boss at work, who had tried to get people to work on Christmas. I asked if she had family, a husband or wife perhaps. I was asking because I couldn't imagine someone with a partner wanting to go to the office on Christmas Day. I really didn't give a second thought about the or wife part of my comment. Anyway, my uncle complained I had to make it gay, and the way I was talking was politically correctness gone mad, and a couple of my older family members backed him up on his these days way. I stepped out shortly after for some air without telling anyone. I felt stressed because I realized a lot of my family was acting pretty bigoted, and I'd been thinking of coming out to my extended family that night. My parents and sister know, but nobody else does. But I thought this would be a good time because I'm now in a long-term relationship with a wonderful woman. I was thinking that if we're going to be in each other's lives for hopefully the long haul, it wouldn't be fair to keep that secret from my family. But after that, I felt it wasn't going to be a good idea. And standing out on the porch, I realized I just didn't want to be there. It was an obligation, so I left. I saw a few texts from my mom asking where I was, and I replied saying I had headed out early. The homophobia going on wasn't my vibe, so I was out. I was trying to be kind of lighthearted because I didn't want to admit how much I was really upset. My mom read my text not as reassuring, but as disrespectful and flippant. She said that it was awfully rude of me to leave before the gift exchange game, which needs a matching number of gifts and players to work, and not tell anyone based on vibes. I texted back to say I was sorry. Sorry I was a little flippant, but honestly, I wasn't feeling good about being there, so I left. I wanted to tell the family about my girlfriend and I, but after the stuff, everyone was saying, nope. My mom texted me back to say that I can't talk about that stuff in front of grandma, who's from a different time. I got frustrated with her and texted back that they had gays in grandma's time too, even if they pretended not to be gay. My mom was asking me to come back, and I said that I'm down to come by if the homophobia is dealt with first. But honestly, I wasn't sure that kind of shit could be dealt with in one night. So let me know if it is, but otherwise, I was out. I also decided, fuck it, I'm making this shit public. I'm not spending any more time worrying about what the right way to show my family is. Because maybe there is no right way if they aren't accepting it. So I changed my Facebook and WhatsApp profile pictures to couples photos with my girlfriend. My family mainly uses WhatsApp to text, and I had them all on Facebook. Am I the asshole for leaving so suddenly? No.
No, not at all. The mom's the asshole, I think. Everybody in the family, probably, but...
I feel bad for this person.
Yeah. Family that is shitty like that can make the holidays so, so difficult. And not to make it all serious, but listeners, if you are out there dealing with a hard family situation like this, go on Reddit and complain about it. It might make you feel better.
Yeah, honestly.
Get out. Like, preserve your mental health. It's really important.
My heart goes out to all these people with not the greatest families during the holidays. Not to make it overtly personal, but my girlfriend doesn't come from a great family. So she spends the holidays with my family, and just seeing her heal over the past few years from actually having a good holiday that's healthy, it has been really great to see.
And that's so nice of you to, like, provide that space.
I wish I could provide it for, like, everybody.
You're so nice. And, I mean, that's the great thing about this community. It's not just Cameron. Like, I mean, no offense, Cameron, but there's, like, you know, hundreds of people. It's found family, you know? So yeah. You're queer wherever you're at. You don't need to be in Seattle, the Pacific Northwest. You can find that community somewhere. And even if it's just people on the internet or two weirdos on a podcast or a gay newspaper in Seattle, just know that, you know, we're thinking of you. We're here for you. And if you need to reach out, there are people that care about you that won't scream at you at your family dinner.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to think that while it seems like everyone sucks, not everyone sucks.
Yeah.
There are good people in this world.
There are good people in this world. Speaking of good people in this world, I would really like to tell you a story about the Grinch growing a heart. But to do that, Cameron, I'm going to need you to give me a couple of parts of speech. Can you do that?
Yeah, I'm a journalism major.
Sweet. Okay, two journalism professionals are going to read you a story, but first we have to write it. So Cameron, I need you to tell me a body part.
Penis.
A verb.
Let's just say run.
Can you give me a feeling?
Depressed, going into the psyche.
An adjective.
Furry.
A noun.
Noun?
Yeah, a plural noun.
Bussies.
A holiday.
Boxing Day.
I need another body part.
Boob. Singular.
Plural noun.
Bikini burritos.
I'm gonna need another one after that.
You come up with one.
Oh, okay. Let's say tits. Another body part. Oh man, I just gave you one. I'm sorry.
The most sexual part of the body, which is the elbow.
You were gonna say that.
How did you know?
I'm a psychic. I need a
hell.
Perfect. Verb.
Poop.
Number?
69.
Two more verbs and a food.
Scream. Choke. Sushi.
Okay. Are you ready to hear your story?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the second half of The Grinch Grows a Heart, because it would be too long if we did both. The Grinch put his hand to his penis, and he did hear a sound rising over the snow. It started in low, then it started to run. But the sound wasn't depressed. Why, this sound sounded glad. Every who down in Whoville, the tall and the furry, was singing without any bussies at all. He hadn't stopped Boxing Day from coming. It came. Somehow or other, it came just the same. And the Grinch, with his Grinch boob, ice cold in the snow, puzzling and puzzling. How could it be so? It came without bikini baristas. It came without tags, packages, boxes, or tits. And he puzzled till his elbow was sore. Then the Grinch thought of something he hadn't before. Maybe Christmas, he thought, doesn't come from hell. Maybe Christmas, perhaps, means a little bit more. And what happened then? Well, in Whoville, they pooped. That the Grinch's small heart grew 69 sizes that day. And now that his heart didn't feel quite so tight, he screamed with his love through the bright morning light. He chokes everything back, all the food and the feast, and he himself, the Grinch, barbed the sushi.
Oh, he screamed with his load.
I like that it started with the Grinch put his hand to his penis. That was a very gay Grinch story. Well, thank you all for tuning in to this very great holiday special. I hope that something has grown resizes in your life this year. If not your heart, maybe your Grinch penis. A Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and whatever other holidays you might celebrate that two Catholic weirdos over here didn't learn about growing up. Merry Christmas, Cameron.
Merry Christmas, Lindsay.
Okay. Hopefully we'll see you in the new year. Bye, listeners.
Adios.
Radio SGN is hosted by Benny Loy and Lindsay Anderson, and edited by Daniel Lindsley. The music for the show is provided by TRG Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org. This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.